Okay, so our limud Chofetz Chaim every day is l'schus refuah of Yosef Dober Chaylish Tav Refuah Shlomo Bekorov.
Making notes.
Okay, so one thing I was right, one thing I was wrong. 75. Okay, it is page 30A, Daf Lamed Omad Aleph, and not 30B as in the book. But the Chofetz Chaim does bring in Be'emayim Chaim that this is the source from which he gets the story. So therefore, what I said yesterday about the Be'emayim Chaim was wrong. And what I said yesterday about the Mara Mekoimus, the printing mistake is 30B instead of 30A. So that's what you need to write to ask all about. And Bekitzer, there's a story about Rabbi Ami in Yeshiva, what's happened and how he expelled the Talmud from the Yeshiva. It's a Gemara, as I said, in Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Omad Aleph. And Bli Neda, because my time is up, we're going to speak about it on Sunday.
Start your day the Torah way in Northwest London, Friday, Kof Tes 7, 5th of July, Rabbi Naftali Dov Rosenberg Schlitter, The Right Friends. This week's Torah is sponsored by Family Greenberg, Lechbet Tzion Chomitzvah, Bobby Greenberg, Neri Yoyev, the Mitzvah of Lan Shabbos, Yerushalayim Sanchisko, Robert Kuhn, Rav Nachas, Menor Van Yitzhak, Cholotahim, Plus, Hashvurim, Chayolim, Lam Milchamon, Shechtu, Levotzeim, Lesholim, Vim Hiro.
Why did 14,760 people have to die? After the entire saga of Korach, with the plague afterwards, after everything finished, what happened was, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to take the staffs and put them inside, and that way all the complaints and all the grumblers will calm down. If things can be done in a nice way, and that's what had to happen at the end. The bottom line was, he explained, he showed, through using the matris, using the staffs. So why did the whole punishments of Korach and all the various stages have to go, have to happen? Would it make sense that Iran would take Israel to the international court in The Hague? They are, for what? Because they sent ballistic missiles in Nissan, hundreds of them, and they didn't make it there, and some fell down in Iran, and they made huge damage there, and therefore they want to take Israel to court for doing damage in Iran. That would make sense? No, wouldn't make sense. Well, in this parsha, Moshe and Aharon warned very clearly the whole entire entourage of Korach that if they're going to fight the case they thought was right, they're playing with fire, excuse the pun. And they can take the Ketores, they're going to suffer. And that's exactly what happens. And after all that happened, many, or perhaps the whole Klal Yisrael said, Atem hamitem es am Hashem. You, Moshe and Aharon, caused these Rishoim to die. Again, who caused them to die? Moshe and Aharon? Or these idiots that fought with Moshe and Aharon? So what's going on here? Where's the logic? Number three. Moshe and Aharon, Moshe, wanted to warn Korach and his clan that it's not worth starting up. And he asked Hashem to create a new creation, some new way of killing them. Why was that necessary? Why can't we have some lion come in or some other beast and eat them up? Or perhaps a lightning bolt kill them? Why does it have to be something new, something novel? What's the purpose of this new method of killing? Pardon? Right, but Yad Hashem can be seen having the wild beast, and not Choshem Asrof and Parshas Chukas, and also the serpents that came and killed all the people that complained about the Mon. Why did you have to have specifically something new? You can say, if we'll have a tiger or polar bear coming in, it'll be also good. Why did it have to be something new, something which was never seen in the world, to prove his point? In Briya Yivra Hashem, the Pasuk says clearly, if Hashem will create a new creation that never happened in the world till now, then I'm right. If not, then not. What's wrong? I had to do something so interesting, something novel. And let's understand all together. We have here a whole group of people fighting against Moshe. So, Korach was against Aharon. He wanted to be Kohen Gadol. It wasn't enough for him to be a Levi. We have the whole group of Reuven, the 250 people, Rosh and the Sanhedrin, they're against Shevet Levi. They want to become Shevet Levi, and Reuven shouldn't be equal to all the other Shvatim. So, are they fighting against Moshe or against the Aharon? And more than that, there's a famous Mishnah in Ovos. Kol machlekes shehu l'shem shemayim, soif l'skayim, she'eno l'shem shemayim, ein soif l'skayim. Says the Mishnah, what's the example of machlekes shehu l'shem shemayim? Says the Mishnah, Korach v'chol adosai. Asks the Nebli Melech, the Melech of Lezhensk, again, who's fighting who? Korach v'chol adosai? We have Beshamay Beshelo, two sides of the coin. Korach was fighting, Adosai was fighting Moshe and Aharon. So obviously, the obvious answer is, Moshe and Aharon meant L'shem Shomayim. Okay, but it's not a machlokes between Korach and Chol Adosai. Says Rabbi Meilech, a famous answer, that Korach and the whole clan all wanted to become Kohen Gadol. They all knew you can't have an entire nation of Kohen Gadols. There's only one there. So everyone said, I'm the real one, and all the other ones are bluffers. I'm the right one, and all liars. So each and every one were fighting with the other one. So that's Korach v'chol adosai. So again, so why are they together? If they're fighting each one against the other, the only common denominator is against Moshe, then how do they come together? What's bringing them? What's the chemistry that puts them together? So let's start with a famous Gemara which we were all brought up as little kids, but somehow, till I learned Afiyemi recently, it never clicked, this Gemara. The Gemara says in Tanis, Chof Aleph Amud Aleph. Nochem Ishgamzu was sent as a shliach from Klal Yisrael to the emperor. Why did they choose Nochem Ishgamzu? Says the Gemara, he was Melumed Benissim, a famous miracle worker. That was his title, Melumed Benissim. They sent him with a huge casket of gems and pearls, something which befits the emperor, and he came to some sort of inn at night, and the guys were bandits, rogues, and they took out all the stones, they put inside earth. Nochem Ishgamzu saw it, started a different discussion, he took his emunah, and he went with it as is, he said, Gamzu l'toiva, and he came all the way to the emperor. When he came there, what was the first reaction? He's mocking the emperor. Let's kill him. Makes sense. In those days, bringing earth to the emperor, Eliyahu HaNavi came, and said, perhaps it's the earth from Avraham Avinu. And they tried it, and every single stone or pebble that was thrown hit smack on bullseye and killed out an entire enemy. That's the Gemara. So the Gemara says they were amazed, such a wonderful present, something which hasn't been seen in thousands of years. They gave him a huge casket, and they filled it up with even more expensive gems. He came back to the same inn, and those guys were sure they won't be alive anymore. And they asked him, what happened? So he said, I took the earth from here and I brought it there. And that's what happened. What was their reaction? Says the Gemara, their reaction was, they took the entire building, brought the demolition squad, the whole thing was taken down, they put it in many, many caskets, they brought it to the emperor. Again, what did they do? These guys took their entire own house, where they live from, thatched it down, and brought it to the emperor and said to the same earth, none of us have ever heard of earth that turns into expensive missiles that hit smack on. And these guys weren't real big believers, guys that can take the stones from a miracle worker and want to kill him, all because of their appetite to have some more money. They suddenly believe that there's some sort of new sort of potion that makes earth turn into swords, and they go to the emperor, who anything that goes wrong will cost their lives, they tell him coldly, this is the same earth. Come on, guys. If you actually have some sort of thought, say to the emperor, I don't know, maybe, perhaps, this is the same earth. Say, don't bash down your house. Take some sample. If it works, make an investment. Try. you bash down the entire house, the whole inn, without question. You take whole boxes and bring it to the emperor, and what happens? We know. The Gemara says they were killed. Now, where's the logic? What happened to these people? In the world of Letzonos, we sometimes think mockery, ridiculing. We think these people are cooled, chilled. They don't believe. But that isn't the truth. A person that lives in a world of mockery and Letzonos, he comes up with theories and theses that are beyond logic. He lives in a world of some sort of mirage. He's webbed and entangled in some sort of belief that every single message he'll get from somebody, he'll suddenly start believing. He'll believe that there is some sort of earth, that when it's chucked at a certain angle and it hits some sort of molecule in the earth, it turns into a missile and it kills. It doesn't make sense, but he has a question. And it can't be that Nochum Ushgamz is a miracle worker. Why? He's a miracle worker, he's more than me. We don't believe in these sort of things. No. Nochum Ushgamz is something special? No, come on. Let's be realistic. It's far more realistic to say that what? That this earth is something extraordinary, that it makes some sort of big bang all by itself, and it turns into some sort of missile and it kills. That makes a lot of sense. A person goes into an atmosphere, into a life of Letzonos. What happens to them is they lose all logic and they believe and buy baloney. Rashi says, Koirich shepikach hoyu ma ro l'shtuzeh. Korach was an intelligent person. Why did he do this mistake? I don't know, I'm not as, I may be younger than you, but I've seen many wise people make mistakes. Because Korach is a picker, he can't make a mistake. What's wrong with Korach's mistake? Every person can make an error. We're human. But people that are wise in business know when a person offers you a good investment, you can invest 10%, 20%. If something's really exciting, you invest maybe 30 or 50% of somebody's wealth and assets. But no one will ever, ever risk his entire present and future on something which may be risky. Korach was wise. Why did he say the Chassidus for him and take his entire past, present, and future, and invest it in something so risky? That's something very stupid. There's an old story they used to say. There was once a chosid, in the time of Kotsk, that went in the cold winter, the Polish winter, by foot to his Rebbe, the Kotsk Rebbe. And it was freezing, it was snow. And as he was walking, trotting on those Polish, if you can call them, roads, suddenly a nice, fancy coach pulled by good horses stops. Somebody calls out, Yankel! Kim, come up! Turns around, some guy doesn't look very Jewish, but speaks, you know, with a good accent. He looks at him. Hey, that's Shai Getzel, his friend in the Chayde. So he goes up with him. He says, where are you going to, Yankel? I'm going to the Reverend Kotz. Can you come up? He goes into the coach. And the guy tells him, Yankel, look at me, look at you. We're both over 70. Look at me. I'm pretty sizable. And I have wealth. I have everything. I have health. And you, the same schnurrer, batlan, you can't even afford a normal way of transport to go to the Rebbe. Now, what do you say, Yankel? Chassid assesses his friend that has already the child or the dropout in the class. He'll explain to him, what does it mean, a blat gemara? What does davening mean? What does Shabbos mean? There's no way, there's no channel, no sort of wavelength he can explain it to him. They told him, the uncle, let's be honest. He says, Shai Ketzel. He says, we're both over 70, yeah? It won't take long. 10, 20, 30 years, we'll all be down under, right? So you, Baruch Hashem, are full of shkutzim, remusim, all trifus. You've eaten, you've had it all. But all the tavas olam hazeh. Gilearo, yeshrichasom, everything you wanted. Okay, you had a good life in your eyes. But then, what's going to happen afterwards? So you tell me, Yankel, I don't believe in all this stuff. What's going to happen afterwards? What happens to all the animals? You don't believe in the next world. Okay, yeah, okay, I understand you. But you're a businessman. A businessman knows you never take a risk when the stakes are too high. You know very well inside, you have some sort, something inside you telling you that perhaps there's a world to come. You have so much money, such a long life, you can't invest anything for perhaps there's a chance there. Come on, guy. The Torah tells us, "V'loy yiyeh kekorech v'adosoy." According to many Rishonim, there's a law that a person has to look after himself and make sure they shouldn't get pulled to what happened to Korach. So, how does a person avoid and see to it they shouldn't live in the world of Latzonos? They shouldn't live in this world where a person sees things so perverted. So, Chazal say, Vikach Koirach, he was next to Dosan and Aviram. What happened there? Say Chazal, Oile Rasha, Oile Shechinai. There is Dosan and Aviram, the famous or infamous troublemakers. They were next to Kohos, and they had the influence, the bad influence of bad friends. On the other hand, you have Moshe Rabbeinu, who's a tzaddik, and next to him you have Yisachar, who the other people that took a different line. So the person will say, what should I do? Around me, not everyone's such a big tzaddik. How can I protect myself? The famous story, it's a famous, very old Russian story. The Ryats of Lubavitch, Yosef Yitzchik, was Rebbe from 1920 to 1950. In a time where communism started and the whole pre-war Europe went downhill. The big city of Odessa, in those days, in 1920, was an Eva Embi Yisrael with thousands of thousands Erlich Yidin. And as the communism took grip of the entire Ukraine and Russia, religion went down the drain. One day the Rayats had to flee. He lived in Riga. A chosid came from Odessa. And the Rayats asks him, Vikim Tayid, where are you from? From Odessa. What's news in Odessa? Says the chosid, you know what's doing in Odessa? The attacker persecuting all the from Yidden. The matzah is really dismal. However, the chassidim are being moistened nefesh for kashrus. We have even a sheikhet who does clandestine shechita. Even though they close the chadorim, we have underground schools and we mamish under the noses of the KGB. We're keeping Yiddishkeit with all the difficulties involved. Okay? And you should know that even though we can't even daven publicly by the Arminyonim, behind doors, it's unbelievable how the serious nefesh of Eden's something remarkable. After he explains the Rayats in about 10 minutes, all what's going on in the serious nefesh, the Rayats give them 10 rubles. He comes up with a huge smile on his face. His friend approaches him and says, what happened inside by the Rebbe? He told him what happened. His friend was a close chosid to the Rayats, says, aren't you ashamed of yourself? You lied to the Rebbe? Tell the Rebbe what's really going on in Odessa. No one keeps Shabbos. Or 10,000 Eden or 20,000 Eden that were there. There's not even 100 left to offer from. Tell them the real picture. Okay. He goes into the Rebbe. It's Chosid. And the Rayat asks him, Vikim Tayid? Odessa. What's news in Odessa? I'll tell the Rebbe the whole picture. And he tells the Rebbe how on this they closed down this shul and this school and this mikveh. Nothing's left. A few tens of Eden that try to do something, but nothing's doing in Odessa. After he finishes the whole drosha, the Rayats gives a sigh and gives him 1 ruble. So he felt himself close to the Rayats. He says, Rebbe, I want to ask you the Rebbe a question. Can I? Gladly. If I told the Rebbe the whole picture, the whole truth, the Rebbe gives me 1 ruble. And my friend told the Rebbe, let's call it a half-truth, the Rebbe gives him 10 rubles. Says the Rayats, what's really happening in Odessa, I know better than both of you. I have tens of chassidim. Now, every single week, or every single day, I get updates what's happening in Odessa. I wanted to know in which Odessa you live, and in which Odessa he lives. He lives in Odessa of Mesiris Nefesh, battling against communism, trying to keep mitzvahs, and you live in Odessa of Yish, of giving up, there's nothing doing, you can't help it, that's the matzav. El Tzofon was also in Shevet Kohos, and he was a tzaddik. There were many others in Shevet Kohos. Everyone can decide in which Odessa he lives. Who does he view and who does he acknowledge? So we asked, why did the whole Korach clan have to go under the earth in a miraculous new sort of death? So one of the famous lines he said Korach was, "Kol ha'edo kulam kadoshim." Says Rashi, "Kulam shomu misinai anoich Hashem elokecha." We're all equal to Moshe. All pigs are equal. Again, what were the Eden told at Matan Torah, at that famous Mahmud of Mahmud Hasina, the one time in history? Amalek is Kahane. Amalek is Kahane, the Goy Kodosh, and the Pasuk says, V'gam b'cho yaminu lo'olam. That the Pharaoh Shlema says, Hashem said, V'kidashtom hayoy mimocho, on the 4th and 5th, the Yidin are going to make themselves holy, and Matan Torah is going to happen on the 6th. And Moshe says, no, on the 7th, on Shabbos. Ma mocho laili imoy, just like tomorrow's, including the night beforehand, so too, the first day also, the whole Matan Torah was postponed for a day. The whole world, Yom HaShishi, is dependent on Matan Torah. And everything's postponed. Why? Said the Tiferet Shlomo to prove there's Torah Shebaal Peh according to the way Chachmei thought and understand it. And everyone knew about this. The whole world knew that at Sinai, what were they told? The Gam B'cho Yaminu Lo'olam. Comes Korach and he says, Kulam Shomu B'Sinai Anoich Hashem Lekecha. Everyone heard the same thing. So he, in essence, uprooted the belief in Torah Shebaal Peh. He didn't believe in the concept of Moshe Rabbeinu, Chachmei Yisrael, taking the Torah and interpreting it as how Hashem gave us the Torah. That middle of litzonus, ridiculing, taking something people know as fact, and saying, no, that's Torah Shebaksav, that's a germ, a virus, which is very contagious. We know, and the Mishnah says in Ovois, there's Talmidim Shavavavavavavavino, Talmidim of Bilam HaRasha. To be Avraham Avinu, you have to have a mentor called Avraham Avinu. You have to be a Talmud. A person can't be kind in his own right. Bilam HaRasha was a Baal Tava, be the Rebbe. The Sfarim explain that any person, we are Zera Avraham Avinu, and we continue his ways. Our chesed is genetic. All bad in the world has a source from Bilam HaRasha. But there is a source called of Letzonus, which Baruch Hashem was eradicated. That was Korach's Letzonus. It was so extreme and so contagious that Hashem said that if it's going to happen, it can't stay in the world, it's really, really dangerous. It has to be uprooted entirely. Says Reb Leib Chassman, the Mashchemes Mashkiach in Chevron, that why did they say Atem HaMetem Es Am Hashem? You know why? Because that virus was around. The virus of Letzonos, which we discussed earlier, can make everything a mirage and make everything different, was around. It has to be uprooted in a miraculous way, in a new way. If it will be a new way of people dying, then this germ will be eradicated, nothing will be left. But obviously, there will always be Yetzirah of Letzonos, but not Korach's Letzonos. So it had to be some new way of annihilating and wiping out the entire Yetzirah of Letzonos. That way, Klal Yisrael can continue. The Gemara says in Avodah Zarah, Yudzayin with Aleph, Kol Be'eha Lo Yishuvin. Any person that enters the gates of Letzonos, of Minos, of Apikorsus, has no way back. Why is there no way back? I saw from Rav Simcha Binyamin Werner, son of the Rav of Tveria, he says that the best medicine against Yetzirah is Brosi Yetzirah, Brosi Torah Tavlin. But somebody who ridicules Torah Shebaal Peh has no medicine there. There's no way of healing the person. There's no cure to it. Kol Be'eh Lo Yishuvin. So because Korach laughed and mocked Torah Shebaal Peh, it had to be uprooted entirely. There's no way of getting out of it. The Gemara says in Shabbos in Vav Amud Aleph, Kol Ha'omed David Choto Einoi Elo Toye. Whoever says that David sinned with Bathsheba, Einoi ela toy. It doesn't say he's making a mistake. It doesn't say it's an error of judgment. He is a metzias of toya. He's an erroneous person. So the Chassidim explains what's in ela toya. If I will tell you, Reb Shlomo Kozvila, Chofetz Chaim, had an affair in Gila Aroy. Does it make sense? Come on. Let's go back a little bit. We'll say perhaps the Baal Shem Tov, Reb Shimbai, Achai, Reb Akiva, or Nichshol and Eches Ish. Hello, Mr. Rosenberg. Come on. So why does David HaMelech yes come into question? Because our people have an approach that see David HaMelech in the same line as some of their friends. The way you view somebody is Eina Elatoya. If you live in a world of Letzonos, if you live in a world, it's not that you made an error of judgment. The whole outlook, the whole approach to looking at the Nevi'im, the Melochim, is toye. It's not a single out mistake. It's the whole attitude of how you view these things. I'll finish with a story which I heard secondhand. There was a Yid before the war, a Bocha, a young Bocha called Reb Osher Zelig Jacob in Romania. It was a Yiddish Bocha. And then the Second World War started. Romania had only arrived there in 1944-45. And he went into the ghettos and then to the camps. And he saw his brother's father, mother, everything was wiped out. It was a long story where he went through Gehenna in this world. After the whole thing finished, he went up to Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, came the Zionists and put him in the transfer camps in Natlit. And the uncle was there, Nachman Elbaum. Whoever was there knew that unfortunately in those days there were certain elements within the Jewish nation. They didn't see it so appropriate that people should come to religious territory. Yisrael. And in Natlit they did everything within their hands to make sure that people would be indoctrinated and poisoned with whatever could happen. And more than that, they didn't let people go to yeshivas unless they had some sort of family member that would take, look after the person because it's my family. This Osher Zelig Yaakov had a big nes. He had an uncle near Shlaim who checked the list every single day of the survivors to see if perhaps a family member who's stuck there in the camps. And then he sees, Osher Zelig Yaakov from Romania, this town. Is maybe that my nephew? Came to Atlit, fought the case, and he first saw his nephew there. He looks religious. He says, Osher Zelig, Kim, come with me. So they stopped him one second. Do you know this person? He says, it's my uncle. You want to go with him? He looks at his uncle and said, where are we going to? He said, to learn. Yeah, of course I want to learn Torah. Here I have nothing to do. Here I'm learning all by myself, without sforim, just about can keep Shabbos here. Of course I want to go with my uncle. So they had no choice. Democracy is obviously democracy. Let him out. So he took him to Yerushalayim. The closest yeshiva to Romanian yeshivas was Rav Dushinsky's yeshiva. Rav Dushinsky was a Rav of Chust before the war. He took him into that yeshiva, and he started to learn. After not having learned for 2 or 3 years, he learned with such cheshek, with thirst, and he learned from the morning until the night. In the Hungarian yeshivas, the shiurim, basically the whole day, those days. Most time is shiurim, another shiur. And he was learning basmada, but something inside, before the day they had therapists that dealt with trauma, something inside was telling him, what happened to your father? What happened to your mother? Why are all your friends in yeshiva not in this world anymore? Why did God do it? What went wrong? And something inside is causing him inner turmoil and he couldn't learn. But he was embarrassed to say it because he knew it was the wrong thing to think. And he was going through inner fighting. One day he's walking on the road next to Shmuel HaNavi there between Sanhedrin and Meir Shearim. Suddenly he sees, all survivors, you could see them on the face, there's a survivor. He says, Bucherville, where are you from? That person had patience, spoke to him warmly. Within 10 minutes, Osher Zelig opened his whole heart to him. He told him, I have problems in the Munna, I don't know what's going to happen with me. Said, look, that Sadiq came around. For example, there's a Belzerov. Go to him, tell him your problems. Where's the Belzerov? Said, now it's the summer, and the winter is in Tel Aviv. Now in the summer, he's in Beit Vigan, But whether there, he's there now. Went back, forgot, took the exact address. And the problem is, big masmit. So the last Shia finished at 9:15, then Zmarev. 9:15, he walked all the way from Shmuel HaNavi till Beit Vegan. It's over an hour walk, there was a no. And he came there at about 10:30. He came and he asked, when's the Rebbe davening Marev? Well, the Rebbe, well, the Rav, after 1933, was above time. I told him sometime between now and 1 o'clock. He was, you know, Hungarian Yekish. What? Yeah. And he can't want to go back empty-handed, so he could go into the Rebbe after Marev. Okay, he waited about 11:45. The Belzerov walks out, looked like an angel, and he wants to approach the Rebbe. Shalom Feigl tells him, no, after Marev. The Belzerov starts davening. Down, he says, Kail chai v'kayom tumid yimloi chulayni la'oilam vued. Kail chai v'kayom, you heard the words, and you heard the Belzerov saying, Hashem, who is alive and exists. There's one request I'm asking. Tomid yimloi chulani lo nevued should stay and reign over us for eternity. It hit him like a lightning bolt. He's standing at Eid that lost his whole family, all his children in the Second World War. And he sees Hashem in front of his eyes and he beseeches, please Hashem, stay with us, remain with us. Couldn't continue davening, he burst out crying. And the tears somehow did some sort of therapy. After davening, he had no questions there. Hashem's a fact, and he wants to be close to him. After davening, just approached the Rebbe and asked for a bracha. And he went back to yeshiva, everything was cleansed. What happened to him? He went to a world, he entered the world of Toiv the Tzadik, Toiv the Shechinoi. He entered the world of Emunah. And a person has the right friends and has the right atmosphere, and he sees everything differently and has no questions of Latinus.
Sure. I saw it's going to be a case of Oysa Vespinoy today, but let's. No, I'll recap. Let's continue with the same theme. The question he asked was, my son Zangazin, why is it that this device, this particular theme of death was suddenly produced of the earth opening up and swallowing Koirach v'chaladusai? You speak to Putin, he'll tell you one or two novel ways of getting people decimated in this world. He comes up with some very original ones. But here the Rebbein Shlomo made Kavyuch Mamasha in Beriu Yivru Hashem, a new creation. So there's a famous quip from Reb Wolf Strikeve, which was, I don't know if I mentioned it here before, but the Torah describes Moshe in a place of humility. Vo'ish Moshe unov mo'oid yikol udom. That means that Moshe was described by the Torah, which is from the Rebbein Shlomo himself who wrote the script, that he is the most humble person that walked the face of the earth. Came along Korach Choladusei, and they decided to give him a different title. And their accolades were Kisestura Ulaini Gamestura. You are lording it over us. Therefore, you, Moshe, are a man of arrogance, of haughtiness. You hold yourself supreme. Yeah, Melech and your brothers, Kohen. We, of course, are people of stature, but we are definitely not in a place where we are exerting authority. So, essentially, what Koirach was doing was claiming that the one which the Rebbein Shlomo said was Unov M'oid, we called Udom Asher El Pnayu Adumu, that they were more humble than him. So if he was Al Pnayu Adumu, the only answer for them that they should be beneath the Adumu. So they have self-created a device where the earth is going to now open and absorb them, so they are going to be level of the ground. And that was the reason why in Briyu Yivru Hashem. But the Sfasem has got very, since we're speaking from Gera Magichi, we'll have to bring the answer from Sfasemus, which I think is a very beautiful touch. He asks the same question: why is it that the Ribbono Shel Olam used this particular methodology of Briyu Yivu Hashem, that they were absorbed into the ground? So he said that the early Chazal, which was also mentioned, that Korech Shepikachoyu Ma Rulish Tiseh, highly intelligent man should make an error of judgment. People can make mistakes, but we're speaking about a serious one. But then they had a vision to get an idea what sort of person we're speaking about. Bal Ruach HaKodesh, he can peer into the future. He has a vision. He has Shalsheles Gedoylu Yoitzo, that he is going to have children, progeny, who are going to be in the league of none less than Shmi Lanuvi. We're speaking about some high scores here. Nevertheless, there is a concept of a fleck. A fleck means that there is a stain. If there is a grandfather, a forebearer, who has done something as magnanimous and as serious as Korach, then that, so to speak, is just besmirched. It has become sullied, the very soul of the family, in a way that cannot produce something in the league and the caliber of Shmi Lanuvi. So if we say Poike Davoin Uvois Albunim, that means that even on a spiritual level, there is something there that's attached to this family that cannot produce a Shmi Lanuvi. Therefore, he knew, I am on the right path. Clearly, my vision of Ruach HaKodesh is unquestioned, and the reason that I'm going to have Shmi Lanuvi as my progeny is because I am absolutely right, and I will continue and maintain my theory with conviction. Otherwise, there's no way I could produce a Shmi Lanuvi. So he goes on, and he says, but Bnei Korach, which were the children of Korach, were of a very, very high spiritual level. And therefore, the fact that they were alive thereafter was because they did achieve. Ibnai Korach, loy maisi, they didn't die. So mukam nesbatz elohem, they had this small crevice, so to speak, where they stopped the Yerida which went there. Now, it means the following. We know that inheritance, so to speak, means something that when a person dies, then immediately he bequeaths on to his children whatever he has. That's on a monetary level. But on a spiritual level, it would also work on a similar way. So if Korach dies, that is the way that he would bequeath, so to speak, the fleck, this type of besmirching, this sullied soul, which would go on to the children. And that would have gone on to this poike davoin uvois albunem, which could never have produced a shmil hanuvi. This was the error that Korach made. There was one thing that never occurred to him, that the end of this saga would finish and conclude with the earth opening, and he would be reduced to the rubble underneath it, but he would remain Chayim She'olo, V'yodi Chayim She'olo, which means that he never really died. If you never really die, then you don't bequeath, because there's only Yerisha for people that are deceased, and that continues and goes on. And this is something that never occurred to Korach, that really the reason that he was Zoicha to have the Einikl, who was called Shmi Lanuvi, was because that there were children who were Bnei Korach. Bnei Korach, loy maisi, they didn't die. And in fact, the fleck that we, so to speak, this stain which would have normally gone on to the children, was stopped at this point because Korach, in fact, had to go into the world of this dark hole, but he never died. He was v'yodi chaim sh'olu. And therefore, v'yovdi mitoch ha'kul. They got lost, so to speak, mitoch ha'kul, but they didn't have this continuity of the stain that would have essentially affected Shmila Nuvi, and it didn't. Somebody who goes away from this world, by Misa, there is a din of Yerisha. Somebody that is not deceased, but he goes as Chaim She'olu, and he stays alive, then there is not that continuity, and on that she all get chaps. Yeah.